Welcome to the Kings Road Podcast. I am your host, the Aries, Justin Yontz, and I'm here with...
City Scent, what's up?
And I'm doing good. And we have a special guest with us today. We have RJ Adams at Red Shoes Media. How are you doing, RJ?
I'm doing all right. I'm just here with my home... Like, I've known this guy for like, what, a decade now? At least a decade. And I heard you guys had the podcast, and I like to talk shit on the podcast, and I'd like to join you talking shit on the podcast.
Well, here we go. and we are here to change your view on professional wrestling, and we are talking about Raw is or we're talking about March.
Sorry, folks, we're having technical difficulties.
1996, brand new. What's going on?
I was like, you're getting cut off.
I'm getting cut off.
Is a tornado hitting in North Carolina right now?
No, that would be Kentucky.
Oh, by the way, if nobody knows, there's like Red Shoes Media, the top deathmatch photographer in the world.
I appreciate that. I mean, there's people out there.
Yeah, talk a little bit about that.
Humbleness. I'm saying it.
Talk a little bit about that.
Okay, I've seen the other guys. Okay.
Talk a little bit about, the deathmatch photography. Tell us.
I mean, well, it's very different. I do have a gig coming up this Friday with No Peace Underground and Violence and Suffering Wrestling. I'll be there shooting. The main thing that's different about deathmatch photography is that you have to keep your head on a swivel at all times. Because before you know it, if you're not paying attention, you could possibly get hit with the remnants of a light tube bundle, which is basically, it's like any sort of...
Were you there for the Matt Cardona, John Moxley stuff?
I was, in fact, there shooting it. It's... That was a wild time, definitely.
You could see him on like front row there.
I mean, Red Shoes is everywhere. You know,
that's cool. Was that dangerous when they pelted the ring with the stuff when Matt Cardona won?
Oh my god! Like I have a pretty clear picture where there's like people throwing like pizza cutters at Matt Cardona. Like, I mean, that was pretty dangerous for him. Pretty dangerous for me too, because who knows where that stuff went.
And a photography.
That did happen. It wasn't in that particular show, but this was in Indiana.
Where the fuck do you see photographers bleeding?
Only in the deathmatch circus.
Only in deathmatch wrestling. That's awesome.
I'm just trying to get the shots.
That's awesome. I mean, the fact you're willing to do that, and I've seen some of your stuff, and it looks great. So I mean,
thank you. I deeply appreciate
awesome.
That, Justin.
All right. So now that we've cleared up the technical difficulties. We are talking about Raw, March 10th, 1997. This is the first Raw where we now know it as Raw is War in the War Zone. They have changed the intro. What do you guys think about that intro?
I think it's the greatest opening intro in wrestling history. It's not even close to me. I put everything in like categories, and I always... like rank things in my head, always been number one to me. It represents the entire tone of the Attitude Era. If somebody says, show me something that isn't wrestling that represents that can make me understand what wrestling was when you loved it the most, that opening does it perfectly. You know, like it felt like it was and I hate saying it now because they've kind of bastardized the term universe, but I used to think it was like almost like a comic book universe where like the wrestlers were these larger than life figures and the regular people were just there to get whooped.
Yeah. It's kind of like the MCU in some ways. That's kind of
how it felt.
Yeah.
Remember how big it would be, like Austin randomly walking backstage and then stops, meets The Rock. Crowd goes crazy. They don't say shit. And you never see them again together for like a couple months. Those moments always used to feel so big. Now you never get them because guys wrestle the same matches against the same people
It's like,
every week.
it's the same people in the same
Yeah.
promos every week.
Well, the Raw has become, you know, Raw is rematches.
Pretty
It's really
much.
what it
That's
is. It's
like,
RGA, what do you think about that intro?
I mean, like that intro just takes me home. I mean, that's pretty much what it is. I mean, I've been watching wrestling since I was 5 and I'm 34 now. I really came up like during the bad old era of like, superstars on Saturdays and wrestling challenges on Sundays. So you have to understand for like kids that grew up in that early era of the early like WWF at the time, 93, 94, like it was different. It hit us like a brick wall to the face. It was so different. You had people like Stone Cold running around. Like, I mean, the characterization of Stone Cold in 97, 98, I think is the all-time best version of him, bar none. Although, like,
Absolutely.
you could pull entertaining moments, but like, holy shit, that motherfucker was a fucking rocket waiting to go off at all fucking times
I
in
mean,
97.
it really was. I'm for
Nothing hits
me.
that differently like that 96 promo for Survivor Series. Like, think about how cartoony that era is. Like, the era that you talked about, to put it in perspective, new generation era, financially is the worst era WWF ever had.
Easily.
Like, it's not even close. Like, people that try to compare the era now to that era don't understand how little business they were doing. They papered heavily back then. Like, they weren't making money when Bret and Shawn were on top. It's like,
Well, look
yeah,
at that
guys, like,
Alamo Dome show. They had to paper the whole damn
paper
thing.
most of the arena.
I
You
know.
hear
I
about
mean,
Austin.
for me, that intro really signifies wrestling being cool, which wrestling hasn't been cool for a very long time. But at that time, 97, 98, going into 99, it was water cooler stuff. And
Exactly.
that intro really signifies the bridge to that, because it's not for a little bit longer, but this is the right direction, because now it's cool. Now they also, this is the first time we see the Titantron. They had never had a Titantron. They got away from the Raw letters, which to me always looked
You know
lame.
what other moments I also felt that were like this? Like, there's a couple moments in wrestling during this time that I just always come to my head. The Austin and Bret black and white promo that we've spoken about already. Because everything was so colorful and then it went to black and white. The NWO. Everything was so corny and then they went to black and white. And then you get the fire of the opening. And then you know what else? The DX entrance. The first time I saw the DX entrance, it was so different
It's
from
cool.
every
It's
person's
cool.
entrance.
From the Titantron to the way the music
It
hit,
was like nasty in a good way.
That was
it's
like
cool.
it was the coolest shit WWE did up until that point.
And that's what they start to hit on in 97 is being cool. They really hadn't figured out what NWO was doing yet until they got to DX, and then they really started to like, okay, now they're cool.
I got one point that should be an interesting conversation. Think about this moment. This happened in March 10th. Austin didn't win the title till a year later. And there's parts in this time period, mainly between after WrestleMania 13 and shit, man, Survivor Series 97. DX 97, where he kind of felt like he was a little bit in a limbo. And but the
Well, he
fact
couldn't
that
really wrestle
he's
like he wanted
I
to.
know, but like the fact that he was so prominently featured and the opening. I wonder how Sean felt about that. That's a good question.
That is a good question. That is interesting
to think about. Like, because Undertaker and Austin was good, and he's always been company first. Bret has always been, and he's never been about just himself. But like a guy like Sean, like,
well, part of the thing that made, you know, 14 when you get there is that, you know, one, Sean didn't really like Austin and he didn't want to put him over, which was part of the problem, I think, with that feud is he's not. And we're going to get to that later. But I mean, I just think that intro, one thing I don't like is the thing that they have coming up, that little barrel thing that they've got, that little MS-DOS barrel. That looks like shit.
I mean, at the time, honestly, at the time, that's what everything looked like. Like, I remember, like, O.J. Simpson. It looked just like that shit. Like, those images that they would put in the court, it always looked grainy. It always looked like shit.
It always looked rough and grainy.
You know, that era, that's how images looked when you were putting them on TV, honestly.
Like, you could shoot things on film, but, like, you couldn't easily scan into high resolution back in those days. That's a good point.
Now, here's the interesting thing here. We're about to finish, you know, talking about Bret Hart and Austin. RJ is like the biggest Bret Hart fan I know, and I have the biggest Austin fan I know. So this is going to be really interesting. Now, the next segment we're going to be going into, Ken Shamrock comes out, and he's being announced as the special guest referee for the submission match at WrestleMania 13. And Austin gets into it with Ken Shamrock, and then Bret Hart comes out. What did you guys think of this promo? I'll let Mr. Cent talk first.
Well, when you were talking about biggest Austin and Bret fan, I like just to point out that when Bret was a champion, WWF was down the toilet and Austin saved it. Outside of that, it was so interesting because watching the shows, it looked like they wanted to have Ken Shamrock and feud with Bret and Austin eventually. Like, it looked like that's where they were going with it. Yeah. Like, and I don't know what happened. I know that he got injured a lot, but it just always kind of felt weird because we've seen the enforcers done a million times.
Yeah.
And I honestly, I think the only two times I ever felt like the enforcer was going to wrestle against like the guys was Mike Tyson and Ken Shamrock. Like I thought those were two matches that were going to happen. But talking about the promo, Ken Shamrock sucked. his facials were good for what he is. He can't cut a promo. We know this. Bret was good. Even though, like, I was just talking to RJ about the fact that I don't know what it is about when Bret talks. And this is true with a lot of guys. I'm not saying it's like a Bret thing. It's like when certain guys talk, it's very easy to, like, look at your phone, for example, or something. And I don't know what it is when Stone Cold talks, when he is looking at a screen, it's the way he looks at the TV screen.
So I think what you're trying to say is Austin
to you.
Austin demands your attention. Lynn Storm said that on Figure Four Daily. He said, like, Austin demands your attention at this point in time.
You know, like, you think of all the guys like Hogan's and stuff. Hogan just yelled a lot. Yeah. He didn't really demand your attention. He yelled a lot. You know, like, I do feel like Macho Man did, because like he would literally like call people out that didn't exist on the fourth wall.
What about Rock or Ultimate Warrior?
Rock is different. Like, The Rock doesn't like, The Rock demands your attention, but he's not demanding it. His aura demands it. It's his aura. Cause as a guy who's seen him, he has an aura, and the way he talks, even in the promos, like, you don't think, oh, I gotta listen to him. It's the second he opens his mouth, you have to listen to him. It's not with Austin, it's about the eyes. Mm-hmm. It's about mm-hmm. the intensity. It's about the vinegar. It's like he needs this. The Rock, it never felt that way. It felt more like he's an unstoppable force of charisma. That is the only way I could really say it. It's like,
what about Vince?
The Rock could do what The Rock does without even saying a word, I think.
That's true.
Yeah. What about Vince? Does Vince demand your attention?
Same. Vince is the same thing. Like, honestly, Ric Flair, Vince, and The Rock, and Roddy Piper.
What about Mick Foley? He demands your attention.
I'm talking about, like, the charisma part. Like, the aura that Vince has makes you pay attention. Yeah. You know, the aura that The Rock has makes you pay attention. What made you pay attention to Austin, I feel, it's his presence, it's the intensity. There's work that is being done to make you interested. I think with The Rock and Vince, and I don't feel there was work involved. I think that's just, and Ric Flair, I just think that's how they are. Like, they don't need to even talk. It's a natural charisma that you don't teach. You're born with, and it's whether it's used properly or not. But, like, it's like Roman. Roman sucked for mad long, but everybody knew he had something. Nobody was, like, shocked when he became a star. The same thing with The Rock. Nobody was shocked when he became a star.
What do you think about about Mick Foley? His promos, are very demanding.
He literally demanded the attention.
Yeah, he's more like Austin, I would say.
Yeah,
he's like the closest thing.
He's making work to grab you in. When Vince and The Rock and Ric Flair, especially The Rock,
or even Taker, you know,
I would actually go so far as I don't mean to cut anybody off, but
RJ, go in. Come in.
I would go as so far to say that Mick Foley's Kane Dewey promo.
Yeah.
I would go so far as to say is that I don't know if Austin has reached that exact intensity in a promo.
That is an amazing promo, and I'm glad you brought that out.
It's a crazy promo. He's talking about his sons. Who someone basically put the sign is like Kane Dewey. So you mean to tell me you want my son to be caned? I mean, that's of course going to bring out the most emotion out of any father.
Those ECW promos, and then the promos that he did when he came back in like 2006 or whatever, where he just would. They darken the light and just have him in there with a chair. I mean, that was, to me,
I would put the Austin ECW promos in there as well when you're mentioning.
Yeah.
I would as well. Those are white fucking hot promos because he's white hot pissed off.
Well, like, you mean, I think the thing with Mick Foley is
something is Steve-O-Mania.
I think he is the best, him and The Rock. Uh-huh. And I don't want even like saying The Rock, because The Rock is such an outlier. Like, as far as promos, like, he's just the top. Like, it's like there's no point.
What about here's somebody we haven't really mentioned, but I think he's actually a pretty good promo is Brock Lesnar. He's somebody who kind of demands your attention when he talks.
I would agree with you, Justin. Like, Brock Lesnar is so good when he wants to try.
Yeah,
because when he originally came to WWE, I mean, of course, they wanted to make sure that his path was laid out for him. But like, I mean, like he could do sports entertainment better than most of these so-called sports entertainers. Do you remember that fucking Eddie promo he did? with the
with the mariachi band.
So much comedy. Like,
oh my god! He's like, if we got that Brock Lesnar again,
he kind of did. Remember with the when he had the Money in the Bank, he was doing the
stupid. Oh yeah, that shit was lit. That was lit.
I think I honestly, and people think what they want. I think Brock Lesnar is the greatest big man wrestler I ever seen.
I would say
he had the greatest career. That's Undertaker.
He sells is like unlike anybody else.
Yeah, like he don't work anymore because he don't have to. Yeah. But like if you've seen his career, you know that man can go.
I was like,
and can go an hour. Like he can go.
He's gone an hour. He look at the Royal Rumble that he did with
Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle to me is one of the greatest of all time. And if you can hang with Kurt Angle the way he hanged with Kurt Angle, you know, like.
Just don't do a shoot fight with Kurt Angle.
He was like 330 back then. Like, think about that. Like, this guy would go an hour being 330 and doing shooting star presses and jumping.
Well, that's what people talked about when he came into the UFC, his speed. His speed, his stamina. I mean, that was unheard of. His power, everything.
I mean, I remember when he debuted and he
punched
like
a guy that did The Rock. He did like the guy did like the stunner. When The Rock does the stunner, he does a backflip. He punched the guy, Heath Herring, so hard that he broke his orbital bone.
He broke his orbital.
Never wrestled again. I mean, he never fought again.
Did he? That was it.
No, that was his last match. Because he was talking a lot of shit about Brock, and Brock whooped his ass, and he never wrestled again.
Probably not a good idea to do that. Ask Frank Mir.
That's the thing, though. Like, Brock can be a good promo, but it depends. Like, he needs to be motivated.
Yeah.
It needs to be the right thing, and it shouldn't be too long because they have this nasty habit of assuming everybody can cut a 20-minute promo. Not everybody can, and not everybody should. Brock is better.
Like I don't think Braun Strowman should ever cut a 20-minute promo.
Like everything that Brock needs to say can be within 5 minutes.
Exactly. Well, that's what most guys can do.
Of all time, they were all 3 minutes or less.
Exactly. Yeah. It was just people. Now.
RJ, what do you think about this Brett, the Austin Ken Shamrock confrontation? I didn't get your point on this. How do you feel about this segment?
I mean, it's very clear that Ken Shamrock's very green in terms of the mic. I mean, it's like pure babyface.
Yeah.
Whatever he was saying in that promo, and then you have like Bret Hart with the seasoning, basically, you know, try to hint down the line that like you know we might be fighting within about 6 months to a year from now, of course, because Bret Hart, I mean, regardless of what people might think about him, he was always trying to set up his next feuds. I mean that's why the screw job happened, because Bret Hart assumed that like everyone backstage is taking this seriously, and we're going to make a ton of money because people think that we really don't like each other.
And then he was talking about Shawn Michaels when he was the IC champion.
Yeah, like Bret Hart probably had it in his mind to make him for at least a good couple of years, and then Shawn said what he said, and
you know. I mean, he always thought, long term. That's a very good point. Like, because I mean, I don't know if you know this, but Brett wanted to be a filmmaker before he got into wrestling.
Yeah, he was in school.
That filmmaking.
Yeah, he was in school in college for filmmaking. Then he dropped out, I believe.
Yeah. Well, I think his father kind of forced him.
Because
his father probably forced him. He's probably like, Brett, you know, we need you to get into the family business.
The thing is that The old school top guy mentality was always be super interested in the guys coming up so that you can set up your future feuds going forward. Hogan was never like this, okay? But like Brett was like this. Austin was somewhat like this. Ric Flair was a lot like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like Harley Race was like that.
Yeah.
You know, like actually that was actually like very common. Like if you were the NWA champion, when you went to territories, you were,
you know, who's kind of like this is Cena. Now, he didn't make the other guy look great, but he would. I mean, he wanted.
It's very easy. It's very easy to say that when he, if you think about it, he only started doing that like within 2 years of him retiring.
Well, yeah. Yeah, he did, but he started to figure, all right, if we're talking about his prime, no, he didn't do anything in his prime.
Okay. Yeah, like...
That's a good point.
That don't matter now. That, of course he's doing it now. He had one foot out the door because he did what he criticized The Rock for doing.
But he's still... None of my business. He still did the damn... I mean, but he... See, he would work with Bray Wyatt, but then he'd let him win like one, and then he'd beat him all the other matches.
To me, the only time it ever seemed like he was okay with letting somebody get control was CM Punk. It was the only time I ever felt when like John Cena was in a feud where it felt like somebody outside of Cena, obviously Rock too, had control of what was going on.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying?
That's a good point.
You know, like it always felt like the John Cena show. That's also what I loved about Punk.
Here's a question.
He was such a contrast.
I'd like to throw into this with this segment that with Brett and Austin and Ken Shamrock. Did this segment make you want to see the match?
I mean, well, absolutely.
Everything these people were doing made me want to see the match. There is not one thing that Austin and Bret Hart did from 96 to 97 that did not make me want to see them wrestle.
I was like, because of course the business itself is extremely different from the way it was in 1996.
Shit, man. Even when they did Canadian Stampede, I was mad. I wanted a singles match.
It's like, yeah. And then of course, you know, you don't have like, you just have the pay-per-view. It's the only way to watch the pay-per-view. You can't stream it. You just have to pay money. Or if you had a hot box, you know, you made some arrangements to do it. But like, I mean,
the hot box.
Things were definitely different in 96. I mean, you had to build towards your epic pay-per-view because it was all about buy rates.
Now, I got a question for you. Because I know how I feel about it. Do you feel that the fact that so many pay-per-view quality matches are constantly done on TV between main event guys makes it impossible for you to have that same level of appreciation once the match happens?
That's a really good question.
Because think about it. How many times that Austin and Brett, we're talking about a feud from over 20 years ago, and they only wrestled like 3 times, and one of them was a house show.
I think you bring up a good point that, but I think the biggest problem with WWE is they wrestle the same match. They have a very patterned match now that Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels were not doing. Austin wasn't doing this exact patterned match. They might have certain flows that they all had to follow.
I think Bret Hart was a patterned match.
Yes, but not patterned.
But
in
not
the way...
in the confines of what the WWE matches. Because
exactly,
I think there's a difference between the company having a match style and a wrestler having a match style.
Exactly. Thank you. That's
true. Like, there's a level of realism that every match with Brett had, and there's a certain level of things he was always got to do. But depending on the wrestler, it's just different because back then wrestling was about two wrestlers of different styles meshing their styles together in a match. We see this in New Japan all the time. But honestly, in WWE, if it's not a Brock Lesnar guy, like a guy that can just do whatever the fuck he wants, so he can just do whatever the fuck he wants, you don't get that. The only good thing about Brock Lesnar matches now is that it's different from everything else, despite the fact that they normally are squash.
Are short, yeah, and they're short. They're very short matches. All right, so I'm going to weigh in a little bit on this segment. I like this segment. I mean, I think it really builds to, I mean, they're showing that Ken Shamrock is the neutral party in this feud. He doesn't really have a side with it. I think that's really the point of the segment, is to show that he's neutral and to show that, you know, Austin is trying to goad Bret Hart into doing something stupid. And also they set up more of Bret Hart feeling like he's being screwed. And they set up that he's going to wrestle Sid on the next Raw. So I think they accomplished a lot of different things with this promo segment. Any other thoughts on it?
Well, matter of fact, Justin, I just want to ask you a question. Mm-hmm. So did you think that they were potentially setting up for both Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart to have a potential feud with Ken Shamrock at the time? Because to me, it seems like this might have been like a seed planted, like maybe like a year and a half to like 2 years from now, that Bret and Ken Shamrock might have like a feud.
I think Bret, yeah, definitely would had that in the back of his mind, because I think he knew already by this time that he was turning heel, and he had already thought about it. I think he was going to turn heel even if he was wrestling Shawn Michaels, because he talked about how he's going to break his ankle. I don't know if you saw that segment where he said he was going to break his ankle, and that's how he was going to beat Shawn at 13. So I think Bret knew for a long time that he was going to go heel.
Shawn is, and such then a he was rich,
doing. I was like, I mean, I miss those old Bret Hart promos, because Bret Hart would tell you exactly what he would do in a promo.
Man, Shawn didn't want to lose to this guy so bad. He'd make him knee injuries.
I know.
He retired.
And we're gonna get
like maybe a couple months.
Man, the next Raw, like we're gonna get to Shawn walking around and not really looking like he's hurt at all.
Walking around,
doing a backflip from off the fucking top rope.
A fucking backflip.
I know. I was
Bret Hart. Anything else to say?
I'm gonna be honest. You know how easy it is for you to blow your knee doing that kind of backflip, the way he landed.
Absolutely. Like
even
that's
if
like
he wasn't injured,
10-15 feet off the ground doing that type of shit.
So anything else to say about this Raw episode? It closes with Bret doing a promo before he faces Sid. What do you think overall? Did this feel like Raw is War, or did it just feel like a step in that direction? I mean, they start the show with Sid.
I think the opening was the most notable thing about the episode. I think the segment was good, but I think the segment the next week, to me, represented Raw is War more. Mm-hmm. Of what I thought Raw is War is. Unpredictable, gritty, and nasty in a good way.
I mean, well, you know what the promo shot would have been like in the very beginning of the previous week would have been, right? Them on the roof.
Yeah.
So like that was of even in 97, that was a completely different era than what they were trying to portray. And then, like, you get that fucking shot of the warehouse and Stone Cold walking through this fucking blown up piece of fucking land.
Fire.
And then fighting in the ring with the explosions.
Mad fire. He don't give a fuck because he's Stone Cold.
Yeah.
If AEW's, like, beginning for Dynamite was like that, I think...
I'm glad you brought that up.
Remember the Khaleesi?
When the
fire goes in the back of her? Yeah. Very similar.
I mean, AEW needs something like that. They need a better intro. Their intro set looks like everybody else's intro. It doesn't say anything really cool.
I'll go and you. Here's my opinion on AEW. I think the first dance was the biggest moment wrestling has had.
Yeah.
In such a long time. Like I will, like we discuss about the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame. If the pipe bomb didn't get CM Punk in the Hall of Fame, the first dance should.
Absolutely. I agree.
You know how many wrestlers have moments like that? When people always love to say, oh, CM Punk, he only did the pipe bomb. Mm-hmm. How many wrestlers have a pipe bomb?
But
that's true.
Like, how many, think of the history of wrestling. How many people end up being lucky enough to have that one moment and that we always end up talking about?
I mean, shit, I believe myself that the promo that Bret Hart did after the very raw that we're talking about,
yes,
that could be considered a pipe bomb promo.
Yeah, no, that's the first.
That's definitely his best.
And
problem.
We're gonna
by far. But, I mean,
we're gonna get to that, you know, in the next episode. But my problem with a lot of the AEW intro.
I forgot my point, but to close it, my point big being, point. And what did they do with it?
Yeah, nothing. They didn't do enough with it.
They've not capitalized.
It should have been the turning point. They should have changed the show, the look of the show.
Everything. It should have changed everything.
Yeah.
Because it felt like, remember, we went to that Grand Slam show, and people laugh when I say a humongous majority of the people there were there for CM Punk. And a lot of them haven't watched wrestling since.
I've talked to people who have said that, how much CM Punk brought them back.
Like, Roman is good, don't get me wrong.
But he's not bringing people back.
No wrestler in WWF makes that kind of difference.
Yeah, like, I mean, between Roman and CM Punk, CM Punk is instantly going to give you more heat, no matter how hot of a promo that Roman Reigns is going to give you.
But comparing the, you know, we got that cool intro in this Raw. And then you watch like AEW's Dynamite intro, and it's just a bunch of guys standing in back of silhouettes. It doesn't really say anything.
It's just a WWE Raw opening.
We do a bunch of cool moves. Oh wow, you know it's the same.
It's the same opening we've been seeing since like 2002.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a bunch of wrestlers doing shit.
The 97 Raw says to you, it's time. We're here and we're going to fight, and this is going to be brutal, and you're here to see a fight. That intro just says, yeah, it's the same thing they've been doing since 2002. We're here to head to a show.
You know what's
and then we're
going to
leave.
Though?
We're the circus.
That opening that we love so much, it wasn't even there for like a year.
Yeah.
It goes in September of 98.
They change it.
So again, then it's just like screenshots of people finding the ring.
Yeah. But then they had screenshots. They got in that next opening, they have, you know, Shawn Michaels all bloody. They have chair shots.
As a promoter, I totally get why Vince McMahon would do that, because of course,
the brand.
Like everything that you shot previously, I mean, of course, it's got Bret Hart featured in the Promised Land.
It's got Bret Hart. It's got Sid. It's got
Ahmed Johnson in it. And all those people are gone by the time that new intro hits.
Ahmed.
So it's just like, why am I going to go out my way to get a cinematographer and like book all the wrestlers to be flown to this location where I could just like, oh, well, these people had matches back in the last 6 months. Let me just pull some screenshots.
I'm going to tell you why. Because you had the biggest wrestler of all time doing single earnings records of $65 million. You can afford it.
All right. Well, with that, I think we're going to close this episode up. RJ?
That doesn't represent WWE. I don't know what the fuck that is.
RJ, Byron, what's
record profits?
RJ, what does do you have anything you want to plug before we go?
As a matter of fact, I do. I will be at Violence and Suffering / No Peace Underground this particular Friday shooting. If you're into indies and death matches, I would strongly recommend that you get a ticket because it's going to be ridiculous. I mean, I'm mostly a deathmatch photographer, so I mean, I'll be there. If you want to say hi to me, that's cool. And geez, man, there's my website, www.redshoes.media. And you can see any one of my latest particular shots there. There's also Instagram, red.shoes.media, and Instagram,
Red Shoes Media, all one word.
All right. That sounds good. I want to thank you for coming on the show. And as always, the truth
shall
set
you
free.
Until it doesn't.